Hello again. It's Larry Tyler with you. I'm doing these podcasts on getting another job in healthcare for the executives and managerial level. So in our last one, we talked about networking. Now we're going to talk about interviewing. And so far, this is the most important podcast of the ones that I've done. You've got to start at the beginning, though. You know, you've got to get your resume together. You got to get your references together. You got to have your cover letters. You got to do your networking. But now, all of a sudden, you've done your networking or whatever, and you've ended up in a situation where you're about to have an interview. Most of the interviews done today are usually over the phone or over a video like Zoom or Teams or something like that. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what do you do about a video interview. But let's just start from the very beginning. So you've sent in your resume, you've sent in a cover letter. They've said, yes, we want to talk to you. So somebody's going to contact you and say, let's do a interview. And sometimes the interview is going to be one-on-one. Sometimes it's going to be a group. It depends on the organization as to what is happening in their organization, how they've got their process worked out, and things like that. So anyhow, no matter whether it's a video interview, a face-to-face interview, a phone interview, a group interview, whatever, you've got to get prepared. So the first thing you want to do is to find out who you're going to be talking to. Is it a group interview? Sometimes all of a sudden somebody's going to be added to it. You can't do anything about that at the last minute if it's a surprise. But what you need to do is get a list of those people, what their positions are in the organization, and then you need to start doing your research about it. Now, if you've gotten in this interview because you had networked so well, you have talked to somebody in the organization, you can pick up the phone and call them and say, I've got an interview with John Doe. Can you tell me a little bit about him, what he's about like, and things like that? Okay. You don't want to do too much of that because then that sort of gets around in the organization. Looks like people, you're going around the process and go around behind people's backs. But if you've got somebody in the organization that you feel comfortable calling, pick up the phone and do that. Obviously, we want to Google people and see what we can find out about them. We want to look them up on LinkedIn and see what we find there. So those are things that you do ahead of time as far as the people part. Second thing, you've got to make sure you've got a full job description. Oftentimes in advertisements or whatever, they'll give you a synopsis, but you want the full job description so you can look and see what does the job entail. And that'll help you also as you're preparing to ask questions about the job. The third thing that you need to have is a strategy. What is the strategy for this position or for the departments that you're going to have? If you can get this, sometimes they will not give that to you. Although I think it's sort of crazy. Tell them that you'll sign a NDA, non-disclosure agreement, and that may take something off of them. So most of the time, they'll send you that anyhow because they may send you financial statements, internal financial statements. And a lot of times, that will require an NDA to be signed. You ought not have any problem with that. You don't need to send it to a lawyer or anything like that to look at. Just know that you just are going to have a conversation that is confidential to a great degree and that they don't expect you to go right about it or talk to other people about it or anything like that. This is an information between the organization and you. So go ahead and sign the NDA and move along. By the way, on financials, you've got to make sure that you get those up front. And if they balk at it, then you need to do some research on your own. You can go just Google it, see what organizations sometimes put their whole financials on their website. So you may be able to find it there. But as important as the financials are, the next most important thing is quality scores. And you need to go to the websites that deal with that, and there were like five or six of them, and see what they have to say about it. Okay. So you need to go in because they're going to ask you about the quality scores in your own organization, and you want to be able to compare that with the quality scores in their organization and to identify where there are issues and things like that. And then finally, just Google, and we use Google as the go-to place. So you want to Google the organization, see what you see. The other thing to keep in mind is the local newspaper often has articles about it that might be on the organization. It might be on the third or fourth page of Google. So make sure that you're looking in the local newspaper about the organization, the board, the leadership, and things like that. So it's real important that you do preparation for this interview. You cannot go in nowadays to an organization and say and ask the question, what are your revenues? You should have known that before you ever went in there. A smart question would be, based on your review of financial statements, would be something like, well, I saw that your revenues in cardiology went down from 2019 to 2020. What's the story on that? That shows that you've done your analysis and you're thinking about the situation. This is a good question to be asking, and it's based upon the research that you've done. So the obvious questions, you shouldn't ask them at all. The ones that are hidden that are based upon research are the ones that you want to be asked. Okay. So when you go from that research, you've gotten your list of people, you've looked for them, you've gotten all your statistics, you've gotten all your data, you're ready to go for that interview. So first thing that's going to happen is they probably will ask you to do a Zoom interview or something like that, or Teams, one or the other. So you need to have gone to look at your situation. I'll tell you about video interviews. So you've got to have a situation where your background is not too distracting and you've got a good lighting and that you don't have confusion caused by things happening in the background. If you want, you know, we're doing these podcasts into webinars. And one of my ones that I had earlier, I had the cat wandered in and it was all over me and whining and stuff like that. And so you don't want that to happen. This time I put the cats up and it's a real life example of what you don't want to do. You want it to be a situation where you're putting the best foot forward. Here I'm doing this on a Zoom platform, and I put up in the background my library. So, and I got a little banner at the top of it that somebody did for me. So you don't need a banner, but you need to have a good background and one that's not distracting. Also, at this point in your life, you need to invest in your career and you need to have the highest megabits that you can get, or gigabits, for your internet connection so that you don't get interrupted and that everything goes very well. You always would want to do a interview on your computer, I think, because doing it, sometimes you have to do it on your phone, your iPhone or your app, your Android, but that's usually not the best way of doing it. You can't control the background and things like that. So most of the time you want to be doing it from your computer and you want to have the camera so that you're looking directly at it. This is disconcerting. Sometimes people are looking over here and then you're looking at the side of their face. And you don't want to have that happen. So those are the things I would practice with a friend of mine and make sure and ask them, do I have the lighting? What's the background? What's your thought about that? And then go from there. Okay. Most of the time, the interviews will start on time and end on time. Have your phone close by on mute, so that if something's going wrong, they can text you real quickly and say, okay, this thing has been delayed for 15 minutes. We had a little emergency. So think about that. Okay. So now you get into this interview. The first thing they're going to ask you is tell me about yourself. This is going to be a 5 minute at most soliloquy. And you start from where you're from, where you went to college, go through a few of your jobs, and you want to end up, this is important, you want to end up in a situation where you prepared yourself for the job at hand. Think about that as you're doing this soliloquy. Preparing it yourself for the job that's at hand and looks like you're moving up and into a better job and a bigger job, and you're all prepared for it. So that's the first one. Then they're going to start asking a bunch of questions. And I want you to go on, and when you get back to your computer or wherever you are, to go on and Google questions that might be asked on an interview. And typically, what we did to begin with, and you know, I've been in this 40-something years, is we would ask questions that were factual in nature. Okay, why'd you leave this job? What did you do? What kind of accomplishments did you have? And so forth. Along the way, people started, and those are good questions. You've got to be ready for that. That's why I say from day one, when you get into healthcare, start your career file. So you put in there things that you've done, the statistics and accomplishments and the date, so that you can go back either for your resume or for when you're interviewing, remember what you did and why you did it. Okay. So then you're going to, along the way, we started asking behavioral questions. And you're going to be asked some behavioral questions. So Google behavioral questions that you might be asked on the interview. And just go through them, see how you would answer those things. And you don't want it to be planned, programmed. You want it, you know, to feel comfortable that you're just answering these from your knowledge base up there. But you'll find a lot of questions that are stuff that you haven't thought about before, and you need to go through it. Because one of the things that you'd rather avoid would be a question that stumps you. And we'll talk about that in a minute, because the third type of questions that you might be asked are what we call left field questions. And left field questions are not questions that you can research and be ready for. They come out of left field. You don't know where they are, anything like that. And I'll tell you the first one that came to me. I was being interviewed by the Navy to go into ROTC. And out of left field, the last question they asked me, who was the Prime Minister of India? And I don't know. You could say, I don't know, which says, okay, I'm not very well read. I happened to ace that thing. I said, Indira Gandhi. I said, okay, fine. But so some things you may not know, and that's okay. Yeah, that was a factual question, by the way. But it was out of left field. So when I was doing executive search, I had a left field question, and it was my favorite question. I asked it just about every CEO search. And I'll tell you in just a minute the results of all that. But the question was this. Congress has come to you. They've given you the sole responsibility and authority to put another face on Mount Rushmore. Whose face are you going to put on Mount Rushmore and why? Okay. So that was my left field question. For a long time, nobody knew that was coming. And so I got all kinds of answers to that. And of course, they'd say that the president, and then I said, okay, why did you put the president there? Okay, probably put this president, and so forth. And we would go from that. Out of that came a second left field question, but it was a factual question. I said, now that so-and-so is on the mountain, whose face is already up there? Okay. And it was interesting. You know, some people just couldn't answer. They just didn't know. They would get two or three because they would try. Some people would get all four. All right. So that was a follow-up to the left field question. And then the final question was, okay, what state is Mount Rushmore located in? And that would be all the left field questions I would ask. And it would be interesting to watch how people reacted to that. By the way, most common answer at that time was Ronald Reagan. But I had all kinds of other answers. People would put their mother, their father, Jimmy Carter, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa. So it just was all over the place. And I'd ask them, why would they do that? And they would tell me. But remember, they had the sole authority. They didn't have to follow precedent, and they could do whatever they wanted to. All right. When you get asked a question like this, then you, and it really just comes out of left field, and you gotta stall for time. So most of the time, what people would do if they need to stall for time is say, well, let me understand this question. Say, I have sole responsibility and authority, right? Nobody's going to override me. I can put anybody up there. And they're taking the answer, getting amplification, but also thinking in the mind, oh my gosh. And so if you get a left field question that you need to stall about, then, you know, just keep asking questions until you can come up with an answer on that. And they'll help you, the person asking the question, and probably give you a hint of this or that or the other and give you some reassurances. Left field question. Microsoft was responsible for this one. It says, how do you put a elephant into a refrigerator? Think about that. How would you put an elephant in a refrigerator? This was the answer. You open the door, put in the elephant, shut the door. Obvious answer, right? Okay. So then the follow-up was, how do you put a giraffe in a refrigerator? And the answer is, the correct answer, you open the refrigerator, take out the elephant, put in the giraffe, and close the door. There you go. So be prepared for those. You may not get them on an interview. You certainly will get the factual questions, and certainly you'll get the behavioral questions. But the left field ones will, if you can answer those right, they just set it up. So I'll give you a left field question. And this happened to me. So I had the honor of doing the CEO search for the American College of Healthcare Executives. And there were 7 search firms that they invited in for that. I was right in the middle. And I came in by myself and made the presentation. I was already a fellow. I knew who the players were going to be in this. So they asked me the question, said, Mr. Tyler, we don't understand. Said, all these other firms came in here with 2 and 3 people, and you came by yourself. Can you explain that to us? And I hesitated just for a moment. I said, you know, they must have heard I was coming. Boy, that was they love that answer. Okay. So you never know when you're going to get one of those left field questions. Now, let's talk about video. We talked about video interviewing. When you get a group interview, you've got to make sure that you're engaging everybody that's on that interview call, all right? And oftentimes you'll have an alpha male, alpha female that is directing the questions and could be the hiring manager, could be somebody else. But they're directing questions. And if everybody else is being silent, you've got to make sure that you're engaging them, because they may have something they've dying to ask that may not get out on the table. So what you need to do is to make sure that you go, when you're coming down toward the end of the interview, make sure that you're looking at a person, you know their name, because you've gotten that research ahead of time, and you'll say something like, well, Betty Sue, you haven't asked me any questions. I'd sure be glad to entertain anything that's on your mind and ask me anything that you think is that you want to say. And so Every one of those people needs to be engaged. And in my career, I found that that was a wonderful technique when I was making a presentation of our firm to a search committee. And it worked out so many times because too often my competition would concentrate on the lead person as opposed to engaging everybody else. And you just don't know what the dynamics are behind the scene. You don't know if everybody's got a vote. You don't know if the hiring manager's already made the decision. You just don't know. So it's important to do that. Make sure that you've engaged everybody. So then they're going to ask you, you're coming to the interview. They've asked you a bunch of questions. At some point, they're going to ask you if you have any questions. Let me tell you what the answer that you don't want to have. No, you've answered all my questions. I don't have any. Don't do that. You just shot yourself in the foot. You don't have enough information. You've got to have a bunch of questions. And I make myself a list of them based upon what I know going in there. And then I would add to it. You'd have to do it mentally. You might take a note, but don't sit there and write all the time without having that eye contact with the interviewers. So you better have some questions, and they need to be good questions, okay? Now, if you're doing a one-on-one interview, you can ask some stuff that you might not could ask in a group interview. As an example, what is the leadership style of my potential boss? Okay. So if you're in a group interview, somebody might venture out, but you want to bet it's going to be really, really positive? I would. So, but if you're having one-on-one interviews, you need to be asking that. And that's whether it's on a video or whether it's face-to-face. There's certain questions. Here they are. What is it like to work here? What's the management style of my boss? What are the first three things I got to get done in the first 6 months? How will I know at the end of the year that I've been a success? And what do you think the pitfalls are of taking this job? It's at least five questions. And those are ones that you ask of everybody you meet. Because what are you looking for? You're looking to see that everybody is on the same page in the same hymn book. Otherwise, you may be going into a job where the organization doesn't support it. Can you believe that? They would actually set up a job that the organization didn't support. And even if you've got two or three key people that don't support the hire, you got a problem right there. You're going to start off on the behind the curve and have to be catching up. So you've got to, my point again, you got to have questions that you are going to ask. And number two, you have to ask them of everybody when you can get on a one-on-one interview. Because I don't think you'll get all your questions asked in a group interview because nobody wants to be a contrarian. Okay. So, at the end of the day, you're going to come to the end of it. You ask them if there's any other questions that they want to ask you, and then you sign off. They'll say goodbye. The last thing from your mouth should come these words. I have a high interest in this job, and I look forward to the next step. Okay? Make sure you say that because they're wanting to know they may ask you what your level of interest is. And you say, at this time, my level of interest is a 10 out of a 10. They like that. Okay. If you say my interest level is a 7 out of 10, and then they're going to ask you, well, what would make it a 10? Well, you say, or you could say, well, I've got these questions. First of all, I haven't been on site. I want to see the facility. I want to meet some more people. And number two, I'm going back and I'm talking with my spouse. I want to make sure that my spouse is on board with this and that before we move to the next step, I want to have full support at home. These are good answers. And you just keep those in mind. They're looking at you and they're thinking, you've made it past this. We want to get you in for a second interview. And we want you to bring your spouse. And then we want to see the whole package here. Happens a lot. And I've seen some organizations now that only go through one interview and they hire over the video. I just don't want you to take that kind of job. I think an organization worthy of your presence ought to bring you in with your spouse for that second interview and make sure that you're on board. And it's usually a two-day affair. Second interviews give you more information. They figure out that you are sort of a fit for the organization, that everything is going well there, and that, you know, you can do the job, and you get exposed to more people on the second interview, and you should be exposed to those people you're going to work with. If you're not, I think that's a red flag. Because number one, they're not involving the subordinates. They probably would involve the medical staff leadership at whatever that department or the whole organization that you'd be dealing with. But if they're not involving the subordinates, that says something. You got to find out more information. It might say that they don't want that input. I think that's a top-down leadership, and I'd be scared about that. But number two, you can't find out what all the issues are unless you talk to the subordinates. And I would have a one-on-one with every person that's going to talk to me. Sometimes they'll do group interviews with managers and things like that. So the format will change from organization to organization, but you should be able to interview those people that you're going to be working with and figure out, you know, is this going to gel? Am I going to have to turn over the whole staff? Are they going to fight me? What's going to be the relationship here? And you can't do that unless you have some kind of interview process with those people there. So I go back, and in conclusion, you know, make sure you tell them you're interested in the job. And on the second interview, you want to tell them at your interest level and find out what is the next step after that. And sometimes they'll be coming back with an offer. Sometimes they say, well, you know, we've moved on to another candidate. Thank you so much for your interest. Whatever. By the way, I'll cover this also when we get to the next podcast on job offers and negotiating them. But always, always leave the organization with the feeling that you are interested. You cannot turn down a job you haven't been offered. Okay. I guess you can drop out, but you can't actually turn down a job that you haven't been offered. I've seen a number of situations where they chose one candidate and for whatever reason, then everything fell through. And they went back to the second candidate, and, you know, they were very happy to be able to do that because they had two good candidates and just happened to have one that was slightly better than the other. They went back and, you know, it just worked out very well. So always leave them with a positive feeling about you and your relationship with the organization. So again, as I say in these podcasts, which, by the way, we're going to turn into videos so that that you can see me, and we'll have some slides on there. But the next one is going to be on negotiating the jobs. On this one, I want you to, if you have questions that I didn't cover, then send me an email at james.larry.tyler@gmail.com. And what we're going to do, the last video that we're going to do will be a month after the one on job offers. And it's going to be called a potpourri, and it'll be answering all those questions plus anything that came up after the fact that I thought, oh, I should have said this. I'm going to cover that in that last podcast. So again, it's james.larry.tyler@gmail.com. Send me your comments. Send me your questions. We'll make sure that we get those covered. It's been great being with you. I hope that this process is, these webinars and podcasts are helping you with your job transition. So thank you very much.